If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Being a parent can be really challenging. It's normal to feel uncertain about whether you're doing the right things to raise healthy and happy children. That's why Child and Family Resource Network focuses on connecting pregnant parents and those with kids under the age of 5 with free support services to help them build confidence in their parenting journey. Everyone deserves to have someone they can turn to for support with parenting. Visit childandfamilyresourcenetwork.org today.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Hello, you're listening to Agony Rants. I'm Niamh Kavanagh.
And I'm Gerard Farrelly.
Agony Rants is a place where you tell your stories and get our advice and perspective.
Exactly. You tell us your stories and we'll give you our reactions. Yeah. It's kind of like Joe Duffy, but a little bit filthier.
Yeah, that will be about right. That'll be about right. Okay, so what are we doing today?
Well, this was my topic, wasn't it? I'm back to work tonight. Like, I'm officially back to work to the day job.
As in real job. Okay, real job.
Yes. Okay. So I'm doing my first show back tonight. So what we did was we asked people for their work stories. Oh. And I mean, I have to say, I'm actually terrified.
Are you? Yeah. I mean, well, it is a long time. To be fair, I've done a couple of small gigs, you know, mainly online without judgment, right?
So yeah.
Only the crew can judge me and they're a little frightened of me by the time we get to it. So, you know,
just generally, a man with a little camera.
Yeah, who has no clue who this girl is? You know, because they're young people who are interested in the cameras and they don't know who this hell one is that they're bringing in. But anyway, they know me by the end of it, though. And
Because they're turning all their sound levels down.
Oh my God, she's loud. Yes, so there's that. And I actually have a gig next week too. So we are both in a similar situation.
I know.
It is my first time to play live to 450 people. Now they're all sitting outside the tables. God help us if it rains. But they better
It'll be short.
No, it's not going to be short. I have 2 years of performing to get out at them. That is not going to be short.
It's going to be intense, Niamh.
Intense.
I'm very excited for that crowd.
Tell me about your gig. I mean, I'm so excited for you.
I'm doing a gig in Knoll tonight, Seamus Enna Centre. It's a lovely little venue in North Dublin. And I'm on with Ard Lohanlon and Barry Murphy and Julie J. So there's four of us, but we're all kind of like, oh.
Oh my God, Ard Lohanlon.
What's it going to be like? Yeah.
Ard Lohanlon. You know, I worked with him in Aer Lingus years ago. You didn't know that, did you?
I'd heard this story, Niamh.
Yes, I know. I carry it.
You carry it, which is the only thing you're bitter about.
No, don't get me wrong. I love Ard Lohanlon. He was the funniest boy, actually, in the place, even though he was asleep most of the time. That was actually what was most wrong. He was asleep a lot of the time.
In Aer Lingus.
He wasn't
a pilot or anything, was he?
No, we worked in check-in together. He probably doesn't remember, but I remember it because I have a photograph of the two of us. I'm in a very predictable French maid's outfit and he's dressed as a red box. I will say that this is a fancy dress thing. It wasn't just...
Oh, right.
I'm pretty sure if I was dressing as a French maid, I would like to think someone would remember that. But no, I think it was just a fancy dress party. We worked together for a summer when I was 18. He was in uni. So listen, he was the sweetest guy. I just remember that. But he, you know, years later, I saw him on the late, you know what I'm going to talk about here.
Yeah,
I saw him on the late, he told this story. And I'm shouting at the screen because that story actually happened to me and I told him that story. So I'm just going to leave that there. You know, Ardle, you know.
Comedians, we co-opt other people's stories. I mean, I've told stories about how I won the Eurovision in 1993. I'm not going to lie.
I just like a writing credit, you know, even in his head.
Yeah, additional material, Niamh Kavanagh.
Yeah. I did do a lockdown gig, you know, just in that very brief period, you know, the week where we're allowed to go into theaters.
Yeah, the 1 week where I think it'll be okay, actually, yeah.
Okay, so 30 people in Roscommon Arts, beautiful theatre. And it's the first time we played there, you know, just myself and my husband, date night. First of all, the thing that shocked me was, you know, I gig, I'm like James Brown at gig, so it's like 2 hours, 3 hours. Yeah. I don't want you to go once I have you in, I want to keep you. And we were only allowed to gig for an hour and 15 minutes, and they were wearing their masks through it. And, you know, I'm used to people being quite interactive and singing with me. It was very
like
odd.
Nobody's ever come away from an Eve Cavanagh show and thought, that was a bit short.
Yeah. Well, I hope they weren't thinking it's too long, right? but you know, don't tell the listeners that. I'd be very upset. But, you know, actually, it's a funny thing because you're looking at people and you're so desperate to be relating to them. And we were very emotional by the end of it. That's all I'm going to tell you. It was
just
it,
eyes.
Because, yeah, it was just eyes. But, you know, I could see it and I could feel the emotion from the eyes. But it was beautiful to share it. But
yeah,
because you miss it. I don't know about you, but I am missing it terribly. Oh, good.
I mean, no, I'm missing the hour on stage, like telling the jokes. But I've still been writing the stuff. So, I mean, I'm still doing that. But I don't miss the like 3 hour drive to.
No, I know.
You know, an art centre and, you know.
The lovely art centres.
From now on, what's going to have to happen is I'm going to do big shows within 20 minute drive of my house.
Okay.
So it's like the mountain needs to start coming to Muhammad.
Okay.
Basically.
It's a little unfortunate for you. That's the Grand Canal or Vicar Street. And I know Vicar Street's been on fire at some point. So, you know, that's limiting you a little bit. You know?
Yeah, it is. I was actually asked to host a comedy show on Vicar Street, like one of these test pilot shows.
Okay.
And in the same phone call, they were like, well, it's on Saturday night. You know, it's going to be a really good lineup. I was like, oh, brilliant, great, I'm delighted they asked me. But Vicar Street is on fire. Was like the caveat at the end of the phone call.
That reminds me.
You need to lead with that. That needs to be, Vicar Street's on fire, but they have asked you to do a gig there on Saturday.
Yeah, but for years and years and years, I've wanted to sing in Sydney Opera House. I don't care if it's on the tour, right? I just want to go to Sydney Opera House. I have no idea. It's totally irrational. I have no particular attachment to Sydney Opera House. But anyway, I've always wanted to do it, but I always wanted to wait for someone to pay me to go to Australia. I'm not saying I'm cheap, but let's be honest. Yeah, Why wouldn't you? Look. And, you know, I once got called to go and sing at the Melbourne Cup. And I thought, amazing. I could go.
Next best thing.
You know, they said somebody's got sick. It was very last minute. I rang my MD, Aunt Kayleigh, God bless him. And he was going to play piano. And the two of us were going to learn Danny Boy, probably on the flight over or whatever it was. They were looking for Irish songs. And I was surprised that Mary Black didn't get that call before me. But anyway, maybe she did, but I didn't care. It was about, and was going to be really fast because obviously it was a last minute thing. And then they rang me back to say, actually, sorry, there's been a bit of a mix-up. It wasn't the entertainment that got sick. It was a horse. So, so Vicar Street going on fire is less.
You were very bleak. God
they,
almighty.
They basically were asking me to go over and replace,
a horse.
Maeve. I know. But you see, and I wasn't proud. I was thinking maybe.
Look, it's still wearing.
You know, Anth is thinner than maybe he could do the black end.
Accommodation covered. Yeah. I miss the good bits, but the bad bits I don't miss. So we'll see. Let's just see.
Yeah.
I could be like Cher. It's like, this is my first annual farewell tour.
So actually, you know, I've done a set of concerts with my husband called Date Night. I think maybe what I'll start doing now is my retirement. I'm going to have to think about something, you know.
Yeah, do it as a big story.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to retire.
It's like, this is the end. I'm retiring. And then just don't. Nobody's going who's going to have a go at you? Nobody. It's like National Treasure decides to retire and then changes her mind. Sinead O'Connor keeps changing her mind.
Oh, yeah. Well,
she's on Twitter the whole time. She's like, I'm retiring. No, I'm not. I'm retiring. I'm like, well done, Sinead. That's how you do it.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure how retirement would work for me. I don't think anybody would ever believe it because I don't know about you. Although I haven't been doing my real job, I did actually get a job.
And it's a job.
And it's really freaking everybody out because it's like a proper job. Yeah. And it happened after himself stood on the steps. You know, Leo did it first and said, That's it. You're not having any work.
No work. No work for the arts. That's
actually,
it.
What
we're
he said
locking
was,
you all up.
Niamh Kavanagh, you're not working 1 minute in this next year.
Niamh, we've had enough. You've had a good run.
You've been threatening to retire.
Enough is enough now. Thank you very much.
But you know, in fairness, they were closing down for a very valid reason and there was no work.
There was no work for any of us, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was also, they were really clear. It was like, it's a year.
Yeah, it's a year.
Like, there was nobody that was saying, this is 6 weeks.
No, I know. But you know, actually, you'd be surprised, actually. I think some people thought they were just delaying until autumn and they were treating it like a holiday. But, you know, it's an interesting thing because I then sat down and did my CV because my young son came in and said, Tesco are looking for people. And I said, I'm not sure I can, surely I can do that. And I sat down and wrote my CV up. Now, Grode, I haven't worked in a real job since I was 25, obviously. And I wrote down all the marvellous achievements I have over 28 years of self-employment, and it qualified me for sweet fuck all. my CV looks astonishing, right? Astonishing. It has Celebrity MasterChef on there. It has 2 Eurovisions, National Treasure, all of those things. And seriously.
Qualifies you for nothing.
Nothing.
And, yeah.
You know, and it's an awful shame because actually, you know, luckily I had 7 years of work. And I don't know if you've had to go back to your youth and remember when you actually worked in, say, Dunn's or
and
the period of time and the reason you left.
Yeah.
Because apparently you're supposed to fill that in. But
oh, God.
You know.
I forgot about that.
Yes. So it's all that. So I put the CV in and fair play, they must have been either A, desperate or B, just completely curious how this ex-Eurovision winner was coming along. And they gave me an interview and I literally had the job the next day, myself and my son.
But you had, like, I think this is interesting because you had very valid reasons for this.
Yeah, always. Oh, listen, I sat there and said, A, I have a year in front of me with no work, right? Essentially. And, you know, the pragmatic person in me says, there's no way my work is coming back. You know, the last thing that's coming back is our work.
Yeah,
you know,
100%. And also, the other thing that I think people always forget is that there's a year of shows that haven't been on. Mm-hmm. So they are now the year of shows that are coming up. So it's like when it starts, we'll be starting from a year ago.
The other side of it is also, you know, even though I would have been part of that year of shows, the thing is there are much bigger stars than me who wouldn't be necessarily doing the shows in my space, will suddenly now be moving into my space because they can't travel as far.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's that element of, you know, where are we going to get a work? And more importantly, the event spaces themselves also have to figure in, you know, when they can take the chance to actually guarantee that they're going to have people in.
Yeah.
You know, and I totally understand that. It's not an easy thing, and not an easy thing to kind of get together. Anyway, aside from that, the other reasons I took the work was, you know, I can't do nothing. I just can't do nothing. Yeah. And it's easy to say you could have done all sorts of, you know, creative things. And I did do some of that online and all that, but it got very difficult. And also, you've got to recognize that I was going through a grieving period, basically, for losing such a huge part of my life. That is the truth.
Yeah, it's like 100%. So everybody that works in the arts gets a thing from it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a love. And then when that's gone,
it's
the weirdest thing. It's the weirdest thing to not know when you're actually going to be on stage again.
Yeah.
And it's all well and good, I think, for when they say about Zoom shows and stuff like that. But like, it's different. Like, you're used to being in front of a band, in front of 500 people.
Yeah. I think personally, I felt the lack of purpose. But more importantly, I'm sure, you know, most people know that my husband had a stroke 3 or 4 years ago. And one of the things about stroke is it's very stress related, even no matter what's happening. It could be from many things, but stress is not good for you. And for him to feel like I'm not earning for a year, we would have survived it. He would be supportive of it. But the point is, what is the point in putting that kind of stress on someone else? Financially, 100%. Financially, physically, anything, when you are physically able to go and get a job. And I got a job and I work away at it, just doing my thing. And you know what? Actually, it gave me great purpose. The people in there are hilarious. I have about 5 million stories from it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And people would come in and say, why aren't you the singer? Why are you working here? And you go, because there's not a lot of singing going on, so I might as well be here. It's like 5 minutes from my house. And, you know, I think I feel grateful for it because I know lots of musicians who are not working and they are lost.
The most important thing there is that it's like there's nobody that working in the arts that can afford to suddenly have a year's work just taken away from them.
Well,
like that,
in this country, it's
very few.
Very few. Usually, if you're going to take time off, you plan for it. So you think about, I'm not going to have money for that period of time. How am I going to support that? Because let's be honest, at the end of the day, we have to feed the family. I don't care who you are.
Yeah. And we all have responsibilities.
100%. If you feel if you're feeding the family, you might only be feeding yourself. You know, I'm feeding also two teenage boys who are like bottomless pits. But you know, but you know what I'm talking about. You are feeding your family, whatever state they're in, and or whoever they are. And at the end of the day, if you're not doing that, then that is the most stressful thing, and it totally suppresses your creative abilities anyway.
100%. If you were doing something where you're trying to make something work so you can earn money at it, that's really stressful. No. Like if you're just focusing on the money,
yeah,
and that'll never work. But like I think you're someone who's had. You had the success before you were earning a living from it, really. I mean, you were doing well at it.
Yeah.
But then you were catapulted into it.
Yeah. No, it's true for actually, because I worked obviously as a gigger before and a voice for hire for a long time, obviously, you know. And when I look at it, you know, I didn't step off the precipice until I got to that point where I physically couldn't do both. I mean, when I look back on paper, I physically couldn't do both for a long time before I really took that big step. I was, you know, I was gigging, you know, 6-7 nights a week and working during the day, and I slept on Tuesdays. That's no, you know, mystery. That was just it.
And also with Ireland, because Ireland's so small, you have to be slightly further along in that stuff before you can quit the... Like, I was touring 3 nights a week when I was still working in IT.
Yeah.
And I was doing that thing of on Thursday, saying, I have to get out at 5 o'clock because I have to go to Galway to do a show and then drive back and be in work early Friday morning. Like, try to get in at 8 so I can leave at 4 to go and do the Friday show because the Friday traffic is worse. And
you nearly said a bad word there.
When it came out that you were working...
Yeah.
Like, there was a big media thing about that. I mean, as cruel as I thought it was, I do think that the headline in The Sun, In Your Isles.
I know. You got to say that is...
That was pretty good.
...inspired. And, you know, to be honest with you, I understand people's interest in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, news articles were basically, you know, COVID, Niamh's got a job, right? And, you know...
And Leo Varadkar tweeted.
He did.
Sure
the same
that,
Leo.
That was a moment.
That was a moment. And I said, you know what? I admire what they did. You know, I'm all for whatever keeps people safe. It's all very well. And
Yeah.
And I'm also going to be very clear. This didn't just happen to the arts, right? For all that we are sitting here talking about it. And yes, it's going to take us longer, but lots and lots. And there's hardly a person alive who hasn't been affected by this. So to me, I'm not sitting here saying, poor me, I'm just getting on with it. And I think that's really important for people to understand. You know, it's not any more tragic that it's happened to me, right? You know, it's not any more tragic, and I am 100% grateful that, you know, I'm getting on with things and doing whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
The biggest thing about the press in media was, like, as I said to you at the time, it seems to be big news, you know, woman has no work, she gets a job. That is hardly, you know, when you put it down to the guts of the, it's like one of those clickbaits when you go in and it has a very dramatic headline and it turns out it's not quite so dramatic when you go in. You know, there's a lot of that in news today. And it's not a big news, but actually the response I got was very different, I think, than I was expecting. You know, there is that concept, I think, that we're all worried about how people feel if in the arts it's going to be a failure because you've taken a day job. But the simple truth is, I got fair play to you. I was so proud of you, you know. I mean, honestly, it totally makes sense that you would do that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and the majority of people, and there will always be people who will go, when you look at the state of that, but maybe they don't understand. If you really said...
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, Paul had a stroke.
Yeah.
You've a kid, gone to college.
Oh, yeah.
Another bottomless pit, still living at home and eating.
Yeah.
And then you also have, like, I mean, it's not, and it's also, it's not like you didn't have a full diary. Like, you did a whole diary, you did a year's tour. Nobody should have to defend that. This has always been my point. Nobody should ever have to defend getting a job, because I think that sometimes, I think people in the arts are the hardest on themselves.
Yeah.
Because there's this whole thing about whether you're professional or not.
Oh, don't get me started.
And that, like, that really bothers me, because that's, you're kind of, like, why are you judging the quality of your work based on what you do when you're not doing the work?
Oh my goodness. I hope that you've embroidered onto that some sort of sampler somewhere, because I'm going to have that on my wall.
Did it make the job harder because of things like it was in the papers? It was on the front of the papers. Mm-hmm. The Taoiseach was tweeting about it.
No, not for me. Not for me. Although you'll recognise I didn't do anything for a long period of time after that, because I didn't want it to be about that. You know, you know, because my experience was no different to anybody else's, in the sense that quite a lot of people found themselves with no work.
So when you said you didn't do anything, but you didn't do any...
I didn't do any media, didn't do any interviews. I had been approached by a lot of people. Obviously, the second they heard, they wanted me to come on and do TV about it and everything. I didn't want it to become about me being the poster child for that. It wasn't about that for me. And I know that sounds a bit counterintuitive, but all that does is fill space for people. And then the next thing you know, that's my life for the next 20 years, being that person. And it's not about that. We're all surviving this period of our time, whatever way we're going to do it. And I just like to be busy. And I, you know, and apart from that, my husband is working and I am working and we're just getting on with things. We're still playing music at home. We're still enjoying, I think, and it's been really lovely for us in some ways, because we've really, you know, we had obviously dealt with the stroke thing and we've been working hard. We always worked, geez, you know, for 23 years we've been together. And for 21 of those years, for 21 years, my husband and I have worked constantly. And I mean, he worked in his photography. We both play music together. You know, the reason we do date night is because really that is our date night. We are out socializing because we love to play music together, and that's what we do. And then we do a lot of things that are independent. So this was a period of time where literally we had time together. You know, we had time together. And after the stroke, we had a lot of time together because I needed to support him through that. And the truth is, we discovered we still liked each other a lot as people. And that's nice. And, you know, we're not much different to most people when we come in the evening. We're going, will we watch our show on either Amazon Prime or Netflix or whatever you're going to watch? And you watch your show or whatever it is, and we have the lulls. We talk about our day. You know, generally speaking, we're only awake for about 3 hours today because I'm getting up at stupid o'clock in the morning and he stays up late. But you know what I'm talking about. It's, you know, we're not that different, but it was really nice for us. And I felt it was less pressured for him because all of the earning wasn't down to him.
And you were also already in that process from the previous year of actually getting out in front, because you were
you were
now the main earner, because
you got to be financially out. You know, and to be fair, you know, he and I earn a lot together because he obviously plays with me a lot.
Yeah
That sounds wrong. He plays.
So I did a bit of a shout out on social media, mm-hmm. Just to get people's work stories, embarrassing work stories. Like, I mean, I have so many. But the one that burns me most is nobody knows about.
Okay.
Because it happened, I was on my own, and it happened in a Northern Ireland theatre.
Is this something that I can tell my grandmother?
Like, it is. It's actually a very wholesome story.
Okay, go on then. I'm back in the room.
And it happened in a theatre in Northern Ireland. I can't remember which one. I think it was one in Enniskillen, maybe.
Okay. Maybe when you tell the story, I'll be able to tell you.
You probably will. I was doing support for Neil Delamer.
Okay. And you've done a lot of them.
Yes. And usually what happens is, like, when we go on tour, we have a very, the routine, it's pretty much a routine. Mm-hmm. Like, I would get changed into my gear, do the show, and then we'd have the intermission, and then I would go on for 2 minutes to bring him on. And then I would have maybe 20 minutes of just gathering my gear up, like, in an empty backstage. Like, backstage is completely empty because it's just me and him. Mm-hmm. And what I used to do was, sometimes I would brush my teeth. Because I used to have this thing that if I have my teeth brushed before I drive home, I won't be eating rubbish. I won't stop at a garage. Like, if I stop at a garage, I won't get my Mars bar or something.
Oh.
And also, I kind of feel like I'm ready for bed. Like, I can just go home, flop into bed.
Now, you and I are such different people, right? Because to be honest with you, no amount of teeth brushing will stop me eating, like, a chocolate bar. But the other thing I'm going to say to you is, I can't go on stage without brushing my teeth.
Right. Well, no, I brush before I leave the house.
Yeah, no. See, the last thing before I go on stage, right? You know, when I'm going to go on stage, I'll brush my teeth and then I'll go to the side of the stage. The other side of that, of course, is I don't eat very much before I gig. Do you?
I can't be hungry.
No. Nobody can
be
hungry.
So what I usually do is if I don't eat the dinner, like I wouldn't have a dinner.
No.
But I would have a Barocca.
A what?
A Barocca tent.
That's not food.
No, but it kind of just, it kind of like pushes all the vitamin buttons so you kind of don't feel hungry.
Jesus Christ. A Barocca. I never knew that about you.
Yeah, I always have a Barocca before I go on because it just kind of makes me go, bing, gig.
Oh, up you okay. Go. Bing.
Bing. So, yeah, ping.
That's it. That's, you know, that's your sponsorship sort of.
What? So what happened was I was brushing my teeth and it was a boiling hot. It was during summer. Or no, yeah, it was during summer. I brushed my teeth and I took my shirt off and took my jeans off and I hung them on the hanger and I was still in my boxer shorts and I was wandering around backstage.
Thinking and you were the only...
Thinking I was the only person there.
And I
opened
right
the door while brushing my teeth and I was on my phone as well. So it was just like brushing, on phone, wandering, looking around. Opened the door and was suddenly on stage in a play that was going on in the studio. I didn't even know.
You mean the smaller studio at
there
the
was
back?
Like, I didn't even know there was a studio there.
Oh my God. Please tell me it was like The Field or something.
I think it was like a one-man show thing.
Oh my God.
Like, or a... Anyway, I know there was like a mattress on the ground and like a man and a horrified front row. Because like,
a mattress.
But he was actually dressed in, he was dressed in like some sort of tunic. Like some, I don't know, maybe it was Shakespeare. Like, I just closed the door and I have no idea how he explained my iPhone.
That's hilarious. Now, listen, I've had plenty of really embarrassing things happen to me on stage. I think anything that can happen to you on stage has happened to me, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I've fallen off it. I've been so involved in my performance that I've actually walked off the front of a stage. Like, I actually managed to do that. And then in the band that I was in at the time, they spent a lot of time putting monitors right up the front so that I would at least fall over the monitor first. I actually did it. Another time I jumped up onto the drum riser. This is my very enthusiastic early stage of performance. I jumped up on the drum riser to sing, I think it was Pump Up the Jam at the time, and I'm standing on the top of this rostrum and I put my foot down not knowing they'd put the flight cases all along the side, and I literally, you know, where somebody actually just goes to the side and just falls off them. And I didn't miss an absolute word.
Of course he didn't. Not on Pump Up the Jam.
Pump Up the Jam. But the other thing I think is the time where I was standing on stage and a gentleman decided to throw his prosthetic leg on the stage, you know, in front of me, like an offering. So lots of embarrassing things, but I'm forever doing funny things, but I have never walked out in my underwear.
Into somebody else's production.
Well done, you.
The first person we got in touch with was Paul, and he said, so, embarrassing work stories. After a pretty heavy night out, I was in work at 7 a.m. the next morning, worked my shift, and in the office just before I got to go home, one of the managers asked me a question, and I closed my eyes to think of the answer, and I fell asleep.
You know, I've never fallen asleep, but I have been in the presence of other people who fell asleep, usually from too much drink the night before, where they would just be literally asleep. I saw someone fall asleep during a phone call. But my favourite falling asleep story actually is a very good friend of mine and I were sitting in a hotel and we were just going to bed at night and, you know, in the twin beds, we were chatting away and all that. You know, the way women do, they're always in separate beds chatting. And so she says to me, so how did you get involved in the Eurovision? So I started to tell her the story. It was very quiet over the other side after the first couple of lines. And I realised she'd actually fallen asleep. Immediately, I started that story. And to this day, I give her nothing but abuse over the fact that she fell asleep. She was so bored by my life.
Next is Richard. I went into a small storeroom.
Oh, God, you're reading something here. You better get to the end of this.
I went into a small storeroom for a fart after a night out on Guinness and a manager walked right in after me and he came out looking like he was about to be sick. Richard.
Really?
I'm glad that we were here for you. I'm glad that...
That's a small bit of oversharing.
Oversharing. I'm glad you were. I'm glad we were here. You were able to get that off your chest.
Have you ever been in a shop and you walk into an area and realise somebody has obviously left one... And then you're afraid.
Then you're paranoid that you think it's you.
That the next person's going to think that's you.
I know.
And not only that, you're looking ahead to see who it actually was.
I do that in my lift because I live in an apartment. And
which part do you do in the lift? This is an important question.
Yeah, we need this. We'll edit this. Yeah. But I, sometimes what happens is you get into a lift and there's a smell of bins.
Bins?
Because somebody has brought their bins down.
Oh, they're not allowed to do that?
Oh, no, that's grand. Like, okay. But somebody has brought down bin and there's like something rotten in it, so it stinks the lift out for a few minutes. But it's happened a few times where I'd be in the lift, someone would have had bins in the lift, and then someone else is getting into the lift, and I'm saying, that's somebody's bins!
You feel you have to justify it.
100%.
Yeah, I don't look at you and think that you could be a bin.
I'm on the top floor, I'm wearing aftershave.
I'm just... I definitely don't look at you and think bins, right? Okay, I'm just going to tell you that now.
Yeah, so bins.
I should reassure you a little bit. Okay, so next I have Joanne. And she blagged herself into a new job as system manager of game on Grafton Street. And a customer asked her for a SCART lead. But she told her with much conviction that they didn't sell them. And it turned out there was a whole section of them. And to be fair, you know, SCART leads and game consoles, even I know that that is a thing.
Well done, assistant manager of game.
Okay, that's it. Clearly, blagged is the
blagged
operative
is the operative word there. Well done, Joanne.
Actually, I admire that, Joanne.
That's great. Yeah, I know. People that can blag, I'm very impressed.
Do
you know what? Sometimes there's a friend. You know, every so often there's a friend that you're like, there's a chancer.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they have a massive job and you're like,
oh no, but the stress.
How did that happen?
Yeah, but the stress, you know, of being in that job, you have to really care so little about life. Because, you know, if you're in a really big job, there's a lot of responsibility usually. I mean, it's like somebody said to me, what happens when you forget the words of a song? And the thing is, I reckon if you sing it with enough conviction, I think people think that perhaps that is the words of the song. I think you just have to have enough conviction when you
just
do it.
It's all about the sell.
Sometimes you come right up to the precipice of the next line and it's just not there.
It's not there.
And you just go, hurry to bird, skirt to
embarrassing work story. Back on the 18th of March, I was on a work Teams call and my phone rang and it was a GP's nurse to discuss my smear test.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
End the Teams call and I thought I had ended it. Everyone just stayed silent and no one commented or interrupted me to tell me that I was still on the call. I'm still dying over it and also a bit annoyed that nobody said anything. Why would they not say anything?
More importantly, what is she saying about her smear test, you know, that they're hearing? I mean, listen, Zoom and phone calls, and I don't know if you've butt dialed enough people, you know, you're walking along.
I tell
along.
You what I did do.
What?
I use AirPods, you know, like for when I'm doing gigs. And I was doing a gig, an online gig there a while ago, and I had the AirPods on. Just before I did it, I was like, I have to go to the loo. So I ran into the loo with the AirPods on, and I'd already unmuted myself so I could just turn the camera on. And I did a wee. I did once in a theatre production, I remember, at a dress rehearsal. The director was being a bit of a...
Were you saying a bad word?
Bit of a diva. Were and then deep? I walked off stage and I said, what's his problem?
It's amazing that you found a diva in the arts.
Imagine.
How did you find
a diva director, Niamh? Have you ever met one?
Have you ever met a diva in the arts? I mean, not a single one. I've never. Okay, you're going to read the next one for me then, Brian?
It was close to 8 p.m. and me and another girl in her early 20s were the last two people in the office.
Sorry, go ahead. I'm already a bit nervous for the story.
She was gorgeous.
Oh,
I'm probably old enough to be her dad.
Oh my God. This is definitely going to a bad place.
She asked if I'm staying much longer and I half said, no, I'm heading off in a few minutes and half said, no, I'm just about to jack it in. But what I actually said was, I'm just about to jack off.
Oh, Jesus. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's definitely under awkward moments there.
And it took some explaining. I'd imagine... It did, Brian.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure how much explaining you want to be doing that. You just want to be getting out of that office and then definitely applying for some sort of course, you know, how to talk appropriately to yourself. That's crazy.
I was once in a spa with my mother and she shouted at me to get 4 Durex. But what she meant was Duracell.
Nice. Nice. You know, it's like when you go into the chemist.
The Farrellys are close, aren't they?
Oh. Actually, I have teenage boys. I've never bought them any. I've bought them Duracell. That's it.
Charlie's share. They really do. Very close family.
Lovely. Sorry. I'm a disaster. So Brian,
next up.
Brian, we're just going to skate across that one. That's just one of those things. I don't know how many times you've just, I was going to say, just opened your mouth and the wrong thing came out. You know, so many things are wrong with that statement. I just think you can say things. You've got two things in your head. I completely understand where it came from, Brian. At least I'm hoping that's where it comes from. I'm hoping that's not what you were thinking about in your head, you know, but that's a whole other thing. I live with men. I understand that they think about it. Do you not find it's really difficult nowadays because people, you have to be really careful about what you say to people you work
completely.
With. You know, and some people have a great broad, I mean, gosh, you know, I grew up and people used to say the craziest things, you know, around you. They used to think it was their job to shock you.
Yeah. I think as well, everyone's very sensitive and fake positive now. Whereas I love being able to say, oh, that's muck.
Yeah.
Can we just do it again? Like,
I know. It depends where you're coming from. Obviously, you don't want to offend anybody and you can't automatically assume what's going to offend someone else. God, that sounds very sensible. But, you know, some people will take it as banter and then other people will take it as an honest mistake. And then there's those people who will be offended if you look at them sharply, you know, and it just is that way. And I just think it's hard now because you don't want to.
Like, do you remember the good old days when you used to be able to say, I'm actually just about to jack off to yourself and no one will bat an eyelid?
You will be surprised how many times I have not said that.
Okay, now we did get one problem.
Okay, good. And we like the problems.
I wonder about the merits of asking the two of us.
I don't know.
To help solve a problem. But I mean, look, we did say if you need our help.
Yes, okay, come
we
on.
We are here to
bring
together.
It on.
So
bring it
here
on.
We go. This is the question. It came in. Dear Niamh Garrod, you asked for embarrassing work stories and here is one I think you might like. I still don't know what to do about it as it only happened a few weeks ago. I don't think we'll be back in the office together before next year, so hopefully the situation will have died down. A few weeks ago, I was slacking back and forth with one of my teammates.
Slacking?
Which is instant messaging.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. I'm back in the room. Okay.
Back in the room. We were slacking back and forth and we were bitching about our line manager. We work in the IT department of a bank in London. And we are both very good at our jobs and have worked there between 3 and 5 years.
Does that 4 years? Or is it, maybe one works 3, one works 5. Okay, let's go that way.
You're all over it.
All over it.
All over it.
I'm back in the room.
Our manager is a nightmare. She micromanages us, is always hostile and rude. She goes through our work with a fine tooth comb and she treats us like we are school children. She makes it difficult to book holidays, refuses time off for no good reason and questions us about being a few minutes late while happily will ask us to do extra hours or work weekends. I love my job, but she makes my life miserable. It was coming to a head and we decided we were going to make a complaint and wondering how to do it. I wrote a list of all of my grievances and then panicked in case the company was monitoring Slack and decided instead to send it to my friend on WhatsApp. And instead, I WhatsApped the email to my manager.
Oh, God.
Nightmare.
Nightmare.
I thought there would be repercussions, but she just said that we would speak about this when we were back in the office, which is possibly next year. Anyway. All of our work interactions are now even more stressful. Any idea of how to smooth things over? Should I send her flowers or do something nice?
No. No, hold on
a
second.
We would love to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
Niamh, saw you at Eurovision show in London when you went back in 2010. When you went back.
You look a little bit confused. Don't you remember I actually went back and did another one?
Okay.
I remember that show. It was great fun.
And you were amazing. Please come back. And that's from Robert.
Okay, Robert. Well, first of all, there's a very good chance I'll be back. As soon as they let me fly anywhere. This is very tricky. I'm going to tell you, very tricky. Now, there's two things that are at work here. A, the problem that you have with your manager, right? And that's difficult, right?
Yeah.
And then the fact that you've actually missent. Now, I don't know about you, but I have done this where I have sent one to the wrong WhatsApp, to the wrong text, and you send the wrong thing and you realize what it reveals that you may have already maybe been very cleverly concealing about how you feel about someone.
I have a situation. The theory that you don't do that by accident.
No, there is an element to that. And actually, I don't think it's any bad thing. The problem is you would have couched it differently, I suppose, if you felt you were sending it to them. I think it's no bad thing that you maybe highlight that there are difficulties and this is how you feel. Because I think sometimes when it comes to management, it is important to respect them, you know, in the sense of the hierarchy and all that. And it's necessary to feel that the hierarchy exists. However, that doesn't make them better than you or that they're supposed to treat you like, make you feel bad about things. So, you know, this is a very sensible take on this.
Very sensible. Sorry. But don't worry, Niamh, I'm going to balance this out now in 2 minutes.
I can't wait for this. So the thing about this is, I think, to be fair, they have to earn that respect too. And I think you should have the right to say, I am not happy, and not feel because you're an underling that you can't say how you feel if you feel undermined. Now, to be fair, like when I deal with the kids have their, you know, their grievances with me, and I say you are within your rights to give me those grievances, but I'm still the boss, so I have to discuss. I'm the one who decides how valid they are. You know, I get that. You know, I'm not saying that we should all ride roughshod over the system, because sometimes the system is there for a reason. However, I am very much in support of you, Robert, in the sense that sometimes you just have to say what you got to say. Okay.
This manager is a cow.
Oh my God.
That's what the problem is. No, listen to the bits in here, right?
Right, okay.
She's an absolute cow, right? Okay, you were bitching about her and you shouldn't have been. Fair enough. And I understand you may have been colourful about her in what you were, what you didn't want to say on the company monitored Slack. So look, so that's not ideal because she now knows your true feeling.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, she micromanages us. Also known as bullying.
Okay.
She's hostile and rude.
Uh-huh.
She makes it difficult to book holidays and refuses time off for no good reason.
Yeah, I absolutely disagree with that.
No.
Absolutely disagree with that. Yeah.
And also, this whole thing of people, you know, oh, you're 5 minutes late, but you have to work 2 hours extra. Like,
yeah, there should be leeway.
There's give and take there.
Definitely leeway. Yeah.
Also, I mean, I do like the little power move that she's done, that we will talk about this when we're back in the office. So she's holding it over your head for...
Well, I think
a very long time.
Yeah, well, I think, Robert, I'll be honest with you, Robert, if I were you, I wouldn't be sending any flowers, that's for sure. And
no
I
way.
Also would not feel responsible. I would not feel responsible for the fact that you are airing how you feel, right?
No.
100% would not feel that. I think for me, sometimes I apply the thing that I was taught when I was young, which is basically if you're in an argument, you're already in the wrong, right? And that's the truth because you're already fighting. Right. So
you bat the ball, you're playing the game.
That's right. So anyway, what I would apply here is if she wants to wait till next year, then you don't think another thing about it.
100%. And do you know what else you do? I'll tell you what you do. You go
apply
to your
for another job
while there is nobody in there and you take a mackerel and you put it in her desk drawer and you leave it there. So first day back in the office, she's not thinking about a conversation she has to have with you because she'll have other things to deal with. No patience for this.
I totally agree. Actually, more than anything else, you should act as if it hasn't happened now. Because if she's not willing to actually address it, then you should not be even carrying it. Put it in the box, put it away.
100%. And also, don't do that thing of just being slightly more compliant now because there's this kind of little beef between you.
Yeah.
Like, don't do this thing of like, oh, well, I better just accept that holidays haven't been approved. No.
Be more garrowed and less mackerel application, but definitely be 100%. More garrowed.
Cheese also works if you're a vegan. Or, well, maybe not a vegan because they can't eat cheese, can they?
No, unless it's vegan. We can get vegan.
Vegan cheese.
Vegan cheese.
I don't think that goes off, though. It's full of chemicals.
Why do I always think vegans are healthier and they're eating nothing but chemicals? What's that
100%.
About?
So stand up for yourself, Robert. You've already done it. I hope to God she's not listening to this show because then you probably are in trouble. But also, do you know what, Rob? Write everything down. A shit list. Keep yourself a diary. If you're going to hang her, have the rope.
Come in with evidence. I know. But, you know, and the other thing is you've got to file it under. She has no power over you. She has no power.
She has no power.
You give it to her. So take it back.
I mean, that's not strictly true. She has all the power, Robert.
Only in your job.
But we're
not
empowering
over you as a person.
We're empowering you.
And if you need a national treasure... Friends,
next time Niamh is in London...
I'll bring Garode.
She'll come down, she'll sort it out.
And his mackerel. Okay.
Yeah. We are pausing for a moment to remind you that Agony Rants is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network. If you would like to support us and the show, you can become a member for as little as €5 a month. And in return, you will get bonus episodes from us and from all of the shows on Headstuff Podcast Network, including all of the stuff that Niamh says that that we can't put in because it will destroy our career.
Oh no, don't do that.
Also, members will hear about live shows and merch first.
Is it Mercy? I did want to ask you why is there mercy on this? Mercy.
Members will hear about live show merch and mercy first. To subscribe, head over to headstuffpodcasts.com. Also, we are going to tell you about another great show on the Headstuff Network called Their Only Stories, which is coming out soon. And it is a great new storytelling podcast. It's a podcast of spooky stories, and you can have a listen to a clip of it now.
Their Only Stories, a new anthology drama podcast that celebrates stories and the writers behind those stories.
I go like the hounds of hell are after me.
Good to know.
Premiering on the 17th of October on the Headstuff Podcast Network. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Their Only Stories is produced by Riots Productions in association with the Headstuff Podcast Network and funded by the Arts Council of Ireland.
Yes, you should be frightened.
So, Grote, what have we learned from our embarrassing work stories?
What have we learned? Oh, my God. We've learned that let yourself off the hook. We've all done embarrassing things.
I know.
I mean, also, like, the people you work with.
Really?
You know, you're going to change jobs and you're never going to see half of them again.
Yeah, it happens.
Everyone embarrasses themselves.
Enjoy a gig tonight.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you don't have an embarrassing story next week for that.
Okay. We should see. I'm sure it'll be amazing.
Thank you for listening.
And if you want to get in touch, you can email us at agonyrants@gmail.com.
Oh, I feel so special.
I know. You can send in your stories, your problems, your questions, anything we can help with.
And
we are your whack pack, your crew. We're the people that will be your support network.
No offense, but some words in there I didn't understand.
I know, it was very American, wasn't it?
But I'm going to also say, you know, I'd like to put in an addendum. I do not want any pictures that you don't feel you could show your parents. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, leave it there.
You can send fan mail. Send fan mail,
but not to fan.
To me, actually, as well. There's a lot of Niamh is brilliant in this. So if we could rebalance that seesaw, that'd be lovely.
Well, next week.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Right, well, listen, look after yourselves. We'll see you on.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Being a parent can be really challenging.
Child and Family Resource Network focuses on connecting pregnant parents and those with kids under the age of 5 with free support services to help them on their parenting journey. Everyone deserves someone they can turn to for help with parenting. Visit childandfamilyresourcenetwork.org today.
At Baker's, no matter where you order free pickup, you get the same great deals as you'd get in store. So you can save when you order during band practice, or at the dog park, or wherever. Start your cart with the Baker's app and save from wherever today. Baker's, fresh for everyone. $35 order minimum, restrictions may apply. Subject to availability.
Choose from a great selection of digital coupons and use them up to 5 times in one transaction. Check our app for details. Baker's, fresh for everyone.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.